You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Television Network. We've got a stacked program once again today. Ted Savransky is going to join us straight from the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada. Teddy, or I should say off the Strip, from Ted Sportsbook and Casino. Paul Bovey's going to step up and in. Where's Paul Bovey? I don't know, man. He's like Robin Leach. Your lifestyles that are rich and famous. Paul Bovey, I don't know. He's going to be in like Laguna Beach, Malibu, Miami, Las Vegas. Wherever Paul Bovey is right now, I guarantee to you, it's warm. We'll put it that way. And Paul's a New Yorker, man. But I think Paul's in great shape, but I'm going to bust his balls on the program today. He's soft, man. He's soft. You got to suck it up on the East Coast, bro. Come on, man. It's not even cold on the East Coast today. Unseasonably warm, which is actually a good sign for the Atlanta Falcons, isn't it? There's not going to be cold conditions anywhere except for Pittsburgh, supposedly, today. As of right now, for this weekend, and I'm not really even sure. I don't believe weathermen. I don't. You can't. You know, weathermen are like politicians, and it's not just weathermen. I don't blame like the hot weather chicks on TV. I blame the Dober system, the Dober radar. Screw you, Dober. We got Ted Savransky, Paul Povey. We got Gary and Thorne. We're talking fantasy. We're talking betting. We're talking basketball. We're talking football on the program today. So let's get right down to business. We've got breaking news. The Chicago Bears, of course, hired Kansas City Chief offensive coordinator Matt Nagy. And we should note that Matt Nagy only called plays for the last four games of the season. And we should note that Matt Nagy was also the offensive coordinator of the team that just blew a 21-3 lead over the weekend. So what better way to reward a man with no experience whatsoever than to give him the head coaching job with the Chicago Bears? But it's fitting that Nagy got the head coaching job from the GM, Ryan Pace, Doogie Howser. How old is Pace anyways? What is he, 32, 33? Dude, you're really giving millennials a bad name here, bro. Like, you're freaking clueless. You're clueless. I don't even know where to start. I'm not even a Bears fan, man, and I'm like, I'm aghast. You know why? Because I'm sick of this. This is why the NFL sucks, okay? You look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You got Dirk Cutter. He shouldn't be a head coach in the NFL, man. The guy should be coaching the San Jose State Spartans in the Mountain West. And then he hires Todd Monken as his offensive coordinator. Todd Monken. The guy has zero experience in the NFL. He was 11-24 with Southern Miss. He went 1-11 one year. He's an offensive coordinator in the NFL. How the Bucs doing? Great, right? How the Bucs doing? They're really prepared on a weekly basis. They're a steaming pile of garbage. They got a million first-round picks, and they suck because their coaches suck. The ratings suck because the league sucks because the coaches suck. The players are good. The players are faster, stronger, and better than ever before. But the league is worse than it's ever been before. Why? Because of people like Ryan Pace that are in charge. You're telling me that there's no one more qualified than Ryan Pace to be the general manager of the Chicago Bears? And you're telling me they couldn't get a better head coach than Matt Nagy? Which leads me into today's hire. And evidently they hired Mark Helfrich because Brett Bielema was unavailable, I guess. Mark Helfrich. Like, I'm the only one who seems to be shocked here. Like, it's like, you know, like, really. Like, I'm as shocked as if, like, aliens just landed. Nobody here in the building, they're, oh, wow, Helfrich. Sure. I see mainstream media. Mark Helfrich led the Ducks to a 37-16 record. Led the Ducks to a 37-16 record? You led the Ducks into the ground. 37-16 is a disgrace. That's why you got fired. Like, mainstream media, are you freaking kidding me? He developed Marcus Mariota. That's like, yeah, I know. Bill O'Brien developed Deshaun Watson, right? And I guess the cameraman, you know, developed John Holmes' schlong. Yeah, no, the cameraman was there. He developed Marcus Mariota. Are you freaking? Hire me. Hire me at this point. I'm sure Mark Helfrich has a lot of great schemes. They're going to beat Mike Zimmer and the Vikings. Mark Helfrich, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Are you guys trying to assemble the worst possible staff in the history of football? So let me get checked. So we hired an offensive coordinator. Not really an offensive coordinator. He only started calling the plays over the last month of the season with Andy Reid. And then he blew a 21-3 lead in the playoffs. So let's make him a head coach on Monday. Hey, remember that guy that replaced Chip Kelly that had like 72 five-star recruits and ran the program into the ground? You remember that guy that went for a two-point conversion five times in a row and didn't get any of them and then lost by 3 points on the road against Nebraska? You remember that guy? I got Chicago Bear fans mouthing off at me. Yeah, like you guys have ever watched an Oregon Duck game in your freaking life. I cannot stress how bad of a hire this is. Nothing personal against Mark Helfrich, all right? Whatever. Nothing personal, but he's bad at his job. Like, if he's such a great coach and he coached the Oregon Ducks, how come not, like, even one piece of crap school offered him a job after? How come, like, someone said, hey, we can get the coach of the Ducks that just got fired? He got a bad break there. Where's the guy been? He's been in a bus station watching TV, putting coins in the TV. What's he been doing? We should note that Mark Helfrich has a lot of NFL experience. He's watched it on TV. The guy's never been around the NFL once in his life. Never been around. And I hear people, oh, Mitch Trubisky needs a young college coach. So what? Because you have a young quarterback, it means you hire a piece of crap college coach that got fired? Are you kidding me? I'm not even a Bears fan, and I'm like, you know. Yeah, Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich. You guys are going to put together a great game plan. What's Helfrich? What's your playbook, bro? What? Pop gun. Run, shoot. What's your playbook? What's your playbook from Oregon? Did you even have a playbook? Like, basically, Mark Helfrich, you took – Chip Kelly leaves you this mansion. You burnt it to the ground, and now you're rewarded with a offensive coordinator job in the NFL. This is why the NFL sucks. Flunky GMs hiring flunky coaches who hire their flunky buddies that have no freaking experience. Good luck, Chicago. You're going to need it. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. We've got a full house on the program this evening. Ted Savransky, Paul Bovey, Ed, Gary, and Thorne. Gary and Thorne will join me in studio. And I got to tell you, this is the first time I've been sweating like this in here. I used to sweat in Studio A all the time, but it's been pretty smooth, man. Like I said, I'm not even a Chicago Bear fan, and they got me really worked up here. And you know why I'm worked up? It's not because I'm a Bears, whatever, man. I bet under Bears 5.5 this year, and I won. Whatever the total is next year, I'll bet it under again, and I'll win again. But I'm upset because the NFL sucks, and the NFL's a boring league. The NFL, and like I said, the players are better than they've ever been, all right? Yet the quality of play is worse than it's ever been. You know why? Because people like Todd Monken are offensive coordinators. Because people like Dirk Cutter are head coaches. The quality of coaching and coordinating in the NFL is piss poor, pathetic. And they continue to do it. They continue to do it. Like I said, Matt Nagy's been calling plays for 3 weeks. He's not even an offensive coordinator. He's been calling plays for 3 weeks. Now he's going to run the Chicago Bears. Mark Helfrich. Mark Helfrich lost 16 games with the Ducks. You know how hard that is to do? He lost 16 games with the Ducks, and I'm sure he's got a game plan that's going to confuse Mike Zimmer and the Vikings next year. It's a freaking joke, man. Like, at Chicago, like, it's the first time being a Bills fan. I'm like, thank God I'm not a fan of that team. Oh, God, man. Like, you would have been better off keeping John Fox. But anyways, I digress. Let's bring Ted Safransky in right now. I'm worked up, Teddy. How you doing?
Yeah, but how do you really feel, Gabe? I wish you'd share your emotions with us.
Teddy, I saw on CBSSports.com, mainstream website, said Mark Helfrich led the Ducks to a 37-16 record. That's not lead. That's not good.
Considering where the program was when he
got there. I don't really understand like how CBS, like they, and they also said he's responsible for the development of Marcus Mariota. No, he's not. God is responsible for the development of Marcus. Like, Mark Helfrich was just there. He's not the, it's beyond belief to me, Teddy. But what do you think? I'll ask you as a neutral observer. Feel free to say I'm an idiot and it's a great hire. But what do you think of hiring Mark Helfrich to be an offensive coordinator in the NFL? And he has zero. He's never been around an NFL team in his life, I should mention.
Yeah, there's a lot to say here. And I'm not sure how deep I should go because, you know, I mean, when you talk about this, it helps when you're white, okay?
Yes.
To get jobs in the NFL, period.
Point blank, you know? Yeah.
I mean, flat out. You know, there's, there are things that white coaches can get away with that African-American coaches can't. And it's just that simple. And that comes to track records, and that comes to college track records, that comes to getting hired in the first place, that comes to going through the hiring process. There's white privilege out there, and this is an example of it. You know, people say, what's white privilege? And are you left-wing? And that's nothing to do with that. This is an example of how white guys have an edge in the job world over people of color. And
Tennessee didn't even an interview.
Very clear in that regard.
Tennessee didn't even interview T. Martin. They offered a job to anyone that can walk and talk, except T. Martin, evidently.
I know. Yeah.
You know? I'm not saying, give the job to T. Martin, but they didn't even interview.
And look, that hasn't changed. It's not like it's gotten worse for African-American coaches over the last 50 years. It's gradually gotten better. But to say that they made huge strides and, look at the equality. And then, the players are the African-Americans and the coaches are the white guys. And that's the way it's going to be until proven otherwise.
Yeah, well, the inmates.
And that's obviously
the
a broad
inmates.
Statement. When you start talking racially, you have to be very, very careful.
No, but that's
not completely true.
No, not completely, but that's, this is where we were at this year in which McNair said, you guys are inmates, basically. You're supposed to be partners. I don't know, when you're splitting collective bargaining agreement and your partner, I thought you were partners, but not according to the owners, like you said, right? I mean, let's be real about the system.
The right. System rewards guys who get along well with billionaires. it doesn't matter what aspect of it you're looking at. Owners are billionaires. Owners hire the GMs. GMs are people who can get along and impress billionaires. Who impresses the GMs? Guys that fit that same type of category, that same type of characteristics. It's a lot of how you can talk to the rich guys gets you the job. That's not necessarily what it takes to be a successful coordinator or head coach.
You're right. That's the key to a lot of people in life are successful at conning richer people. And exactly. All right, so
let's be real, Gabe. If you knew how to con rich guys or I knew how to con rich guys better, we wouldn't be doing what we'd be doing. We'd be living on an island somewhere.
Yeah. Or president.
Yeah, exactly.
Falcons and Eagles. Falcons laying 3. Angles for both teams here. One thing that catches my eye, Teddy, I'll ask you. The fact that this is this is their fifth game for the Atlanta Falcons in 5 weeks, and it'll be the fourth game in 5 games. It'll be on the road. Does that catch up to them, do you think, at all?
Maybe. You talk about the schedule that Atlanta's played over the last month.
Grueling.
One tough game after the next.
Yeah. Even going back like 6 weeks, even before the last fight, like you said, man, just one grinding team after another.
Must win the whole way. I'll just get the numbers, the teams right here. Was Minnesota, New Orleans, the game at Tampa, New Orleans again, Carolina, and then last week L.A. That's their stretch. So they're certainly battle-tested, but without the benefit of a bye week, playing on the West Coast last week, playing on the East Coast this week. This is a dome team playing outdoors, But if you're making a case for the Eagles, and how many times you and I are not amateurs at this, Gabe. We've been around a while. How many times have we fallen victim to the backup quarterback can play in the playoffs, and the backup quarterback can never play in the playoffs?
I know.
I've fallen for that multiple times.
I don't trust Nick Foles, I'll be honest with you. I don't. And you're right. Normally, we as gamblers, like, the mainstream media worries about that. You're right. The backup will be fine. You know, I'm one of those guys, Teddy, normally. But, you know, to me, Julio Jones and Sanu are big mismatch problems for the Philadelphia Eagles secondary. But will the Atlanta Falcons get enough time to take advantage of that? To me, that, you know, this game is won and lost in the trenches, Teddy.
When you look at the course, all games are won and lost in the trenches.
Yes.
At all, this one is.
But specifically, I'm saying the Eagles' strength is that front four.
No question.
They get after you. They create pressure. They can get to the quarterback. They're good against the run. But you can throw the ball on them. But you're going to need a couple of seconds to give to Matt Ryan to do this.
Yeah. And in my mind, this it's a huge difference who scores first in this game.
Yeah.
If Philly's playing from ahead, I think they're in decent shape.
Yeah.
You know? If they don't fall behind, I think that as long as you're not asking Foles to win the game for you, you know, and we've seen him play well. We saw him throw four touchdowns again against the Giants, but he was good in that game. If you watched it, he passed the eye test. The game against the Rams, when he came in off the bench, he passed the eye test. The last two games, where it was ice cold and the center couldn't get him the ball on a shotgun snap, he didn't pass the eye test either time. It is supposed to be a little bit warmer. Game time temperature is above freezing. I think that might help Nick Foles in this one.
Yeah, to me, I like the Falcons, Teddy, but I don't think they should be 3-point favorites. I think it should be a pick 'em. You know, like even with this quarterback situation.
If you think it should be a pick 'em, then you clearly don't like the Falcons.
No, but I like the Falcons to win the game. I think they will win the game. I just don't like the number. You know this as well as I do. It's hard to win back-to-back weeks on the road in the playoffs, man. It just is. I mean, the last 58 times a team has won as an underdog on the road or just as an underdog, only 12 times have they won. And it's courtesy of Mark Lawrence's database right there. What about the total, Teddy, at 41? Feels a little low to me.
Well, I mean, when you look at the Eagles' defensive numbers under Jim Schwartz, and you talked about the mismatch and the issues that Philly has in the secondary against Atlanta's receivers. Man, the Eagles' defensive numbers, I mean, their stats are off the charts. You know, top quartile against the run, top quartile against the pass, top quartile overall. You look at Atlanta's defense down the stretch, and their season-long numbers aren't that great. You look at the Falcons down the stretch, man, their defense has been the dominant unit on the field. It's not the offense. It's not Julio Jones in the passing game.
Those guys fly around on defense, man. They're fast.
Exactly. So I'm not in any rush to bet this game over the total. If you're Philly, what do you want to do?
Slow it down and pound my three running backs.
Yeah. Bingo. You don't want to put Nick Foles into bad situations. I'm not betting the over in this game, total-wise, to be under or pass for this better.
All right, Titans and Pats. I was sort of trying to talk myself into the Titans. Well, you know, maybe run the ball and eat the clock a little bit. Nah, I keep on arriving at 35-17. You know what I mean? So I'll put the ball in your court here. What's your take on that?
That's exactly. I mean, I'm sitting there. I'm going through the games. And I'm like, you know, I can make a good case for the Titans. Look at the run numbers. Look what they did last week and 3.8 yards per carry after contact.
Derrick Henry.
Last week. And the Patriots' defense against the run isn't any good. And here's New England coming apart at the seams. And Belichick and Brady are feuding. And then, you know, so I'm making all these cases. Look at the Patriots' defense. They can't stop the run. The Titans will do exactly what they did last week. And then you're like, all right, let's sleep on it. Let's think about it again tomorrow. And you wake up the next morning and you look at the Patriots, 9-1 against the spread their last 10 ball games. The Patriots last year, the single best point spread team in the NFL. It doesn't happen for the Super Bowl champs. They get too public too fast.
Yeah.
The Patriots, best team in the NFL against the spread last year. And 9-1 against the spread their final 10 ball games. This is a New England team that is perennially undervalued in the betting markets. Okay, they're a public team. Guess what? The public doesn't set lines. The wise guys set lines. What do the wise guys see? They see a statistical profile. And I was looking at stuff again in the last 24 hours. People saying, Patriots defensive line, F. You know, these crazy grades on New England's defense. Look at these full season stats. And I'm like, okay, the stats aren't that good. Are you watching the same team that I'm watching that's covering the spread every week? So, yeah, I made a case for Tennessee, and I threw it out the window. Lean towards the over, I guess, if I'm going to get involved in this one.
I like where you're going with that. Yeah, we should note, too, you want to just throw a couple of other numbers. The Patriots are 23-2 all-time versus teams in the AFC South. The only two losses when Peyton Manning was on the Colts.
Though, I mean, realistically, I mean, is that something that you would make a bet on?
No, but I'm looking at, there's an overall pattern here of yeah, in the sense that the AFC South, the Patriots own them. That the Titans, sure. It's sort of like a conference. You know, I'm looking at the AFC South as, you know, the AAC, you know what I mean? Taking on the SEC, you know, it's like, yeah, you guys are right for your conference, but no, but, you know, Tom Brady, they've won 18 straight games here against them. You know, you could talk about the playoffs, as you mentioned, a 9-1 ATS run. If you want to hang your hat on anything, the Patriots have been double digits in the playoffs 5 times with Tom Brady, and they are 2-3 against the spread.
There you go.
Yeah, but I don't think Tennessee embarrassed themselves. It's not like, oh, you know, it's a, you know, 42-0 humiliation. But ultimately, they're not going to be a keep up, and I don't think they'll be able to disrupt Tom Brady enough. You know, last year, Houston was able to get to Brady, but they couldn't do enough offensively, and they didn't cover the number. The Pats covered barely. It's like 16.5, 15.5 point favorites. I think they won by 16, right? So I just don't think Tennessee's going to do enough to disrupt them, and Derrick Henry's fine. You can run him, but how much can you run Derrick Henry if you're losing 21-3? And let us not forget, guys, too, last week, before Travis Kelce got hurt, KC was carving him up through the air. The Chiefs just don't, you know, the Chiefs are just so damn reliant. So Gronkowski's going to carve them up through the air here as well. Jags and Steelers, here's another one. I'm not going to lie. I've sort of flip-flopped a couple of times on this one, too, that I throw that 30-9 win out the window. But at the same point in time, from a physical standpoint, I think the Jags do match up very well with this defense, getting 7 points. You know, what do you make of this one?
This is another game where who's playing with the lead matters a lot. You know, when you're talking about for live wagering purposes, it matters an enormous amount. If Jacksonville takes a lead in this ball game and they don't have to rely on Blake Bortles to make throws, they're live to win straight up.
Yeah, and Fournette starts running a bit, and yeah, he's going to be a load in the cold to tackle. And
sure.
Yeah, like you said. Look,
this is the number one defense in the NFL. You don't see the number one ranked defense in the NFL as a 7-plus point.
And they're not intimidated. I know it sounds cliche, but they beat them in this stadium this year. These Jag players.
They beat them down in the stadium.
And the Jag players are like trash talking dudes. You know, like they were like, screw you, old man. Remember Ramsey told him it's a changing of the guard. Like,
I remember.
Like, yeah,
remember
they're not. They're on Pittsburgh in that game. They're not coming in here as young minnows. Ooh, we're going to Pittsburgh. They're coming in here like a prison team running their mouth. You know?
Sure. And they got away with it. But if the Jags fall behind.
Yeah.
And Blake Bortles has to make plays, Blake Bortles will not be able to make plays. I'm confident of that. That if the Steelers are up 14-3, Pittsburgh's going to win this game.
Yeah.
You know, because as we've seen, not once, not twice, not 3 times, not 20 times, how many times do we have to see Blake Bortles to say, this guy is not going to carry his team to victory? And when you look at what Jacksonville did this season, if you watch Blake Bortles in the close games, it was awful, god-awful, again and again, tight game. Remember that overtime game against the Jets?
Yeah.
I mean, I could think of 5 different games where Blake Bortles had chances to win and couldn't make a play. You know, the Bills scored 3 points last week. 3. How many mistakes did Buffalo make in that game, Gabe? 500?
Yeah.
And the Jags still didn't cover. So if Jacksonville falls behind, they're in trouble. If they play with the lead, they're live to win.
The one game that all week I've been sort of the one that I've been most confident about, I like the Vikings. I think the Vikings are going to the Super Bowl. You know, it was 3.5, then it was 4. It's up to 5 right now. You know, people talking about Case Keenum. Oh, Case Keenum this, Case Keenum that. Case Keenum's going to be just fine. I think the Vikings defense are just going to overwhelm the Saints here. End of the line for the Saints, in my opinion, Teddy, in this game.
I don't know that I agree with that one. If I'm playing, I'm probably going to take with New Orleans, and this is why, okay? Again, it's not Blake Bortles. It's not Marcus Mariota. This is Case Keenum. I know he's had great regular season numbers. Playoffs are different. For the backup quarterbacks, laying playoffs are real different. You talk about a Saints team, and I understand what – and I remember the first meeting in week one doesn't matter.
No.
Saints moved the ball up and down the field against Minnesota's defense in that game. What they struggled was in the red zone. I think they converted 1 of 5 red zone opportunities. And if they don't score touchdowns here, it'll be another problem. But when you look at this New Orleans offense, as good as anything the Vikings have seen all season, Really has. It's a dome team playing in a dome. And the balance the Saints have, the playmakers the Saints have, they're pretty good. They can hang with anyone. I'd rather take the points and lay them in this one.
Ted Savransky, you can find his final opinions and selections over at sportsmemo.com, covers experts.com. And, of course, you're going to watch Teddy on a daily basis over at the SBR YouTube page. So, Teddy, before we get you out here, we got about 2 minutes. We got three games on the NBA board this evening. Of course, there was an early game in London today. Cavaliers and Raptors. You know, I'm a Raptor fan and a little disappointed some of the luster is taken away from this basketball game. You know, Kyle Lowry got hurt a couple of nights ago. It was a nasty fall, but nothing too serious. You know, he just fell on his back and his ass type of deal. He'll be all right. But Serge Ibaka, it was funny. Ibaka got suspended last week for getting into it with a team official. And now again, he got into it the other night with James Johnson, who you don't want to get into with that guy. That guy's like the toughest guy in the NBA. He's like a 7-degree black belt and stuff. And he's crazy. But nevertheless, so the Raptors are definitely shorthanded here this evening against the Cavs. We got the Clippers, big win last night in Golden State. They're laying 1.5 against the Kings, who are like just terrible. And then you got the Spurs down to 2.5 in the Lakers right now. You don't have to analyze all three games, Teddy, but what do you think of the NBA board tonight?
Limited. And he's saying, you know, who's the toughest guy in the NBA? I'll tell you what, I don't want to run into a Bobby Portis punch anytime soon.
Neither does Miro take.
No shortage of tough guys in the NBA, but certainly a lot of the luster off this Cavs-Raptors matchup because of the Toronto injuries. That being said, you know, you think the Raptors are going to lay down tonight?
No, and they're not, especially they didn't play well the other night either. They're going to be fired up for this game.
They sure will. And, you know, this is a Cleveland team that has nothing to prove in November and December and January and February. We'll start talking about maybe betting on the Cavs. I don't think I've bet on the Cavs all year. I know I bet against them a bunch.
Yeah.
And being that they are dead last in the NBA against the spread, you know, that's not a bad strategy to take, especially in a game where they're taking money. You know, Cleveland starts caring about games after the All-Star break. Between now and then, it's all garbage time.
Hard not to take a look at the over, guys, too, since Isaiah Thomas is on the floor a lot, man. There's just been a million points. He can't defend anybody. We got to get out of here. It's always a pleasure. Teddy, watch Teddy's videos on a daily basis. He posts them on his Twitter account, SBR YouTube page as well. Thanks, Teddy.
Cheers.
Ted Savransky with us. Paul Povey joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Let's send it to Los Angeles, California. Paul Povey, VegasInsider.com, steps up and then joins us on the Thursday edition of Game Time Decisions. What's going on, Paul?
Not much, Gabe. How you doing, buddy?
It's good stuff. Good stuff, Paul. Good to have you back in a rotation. Let's talk some NFL football. We got about 10 minutes and four games to get to. Let's start off with the first game, Saturday afternoon, the Falcons and the Eagles. Falcons laying 3 in this spot. I liked the Falcons last week. I liked them more last week. I was in love with the Birds last week, Dirty Birds. I like the Falcons this week, but don't love them this week. I think it's tough laying 3 points on the road against a pretty good Philadelphia Eagle team, even though they have Nick Foles at the quarterback position. But I think Atlanta's going to win the game. What's your take?
My take is that I'm all over the Philadelphia Eagles here. Gabe, if Carson Wentz were in the lineup, they'd be a 5-point favorite. So now Atlanta shifts to a 3-point. The Eagles would be a 5-point favorite. Atlanta now shifts to a 5-point favorite, 3-point favorite. That is an 8-point differential. To me, that's too much overcompensation. That's overcompensation in the line. Atlanta, I don't feel, is a good football team, a great football team. It's deserving to be 6 points better on a neutral field. Last week, they capitalized on turnovers by the Rams, 2 of them the week prior in a 22-10 win over the Carolina Panthers. Cam Newton was terrible. They turned the ball over 3 times, and I think the public is now buying into the Atlanta Falcons off these 2 games. And I don't think it's warranted. I think the Philadelphia Eagles offer a lot of value. It's the first time a number 6 team has been favored over the 1 seed on the road. It's not justified. I'm all over the Eagles here. By the way, Nick Foles, in his first full year in the NFL, 25 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, definitely has it in him. Will he come up with a big game? I don't know, but I got to go with the value here at +3.
Yeah, it really is value, isn't it? You got a 1 seed getting points on their home field in a divisional round game. Yeah, it's almost unheard of, really, to be honest with you. Here's going back to 1990, guys, as far as the NFC. NFC number 1 seeds in the NFC are 23-3 straight up and 17-9 against the spread in a divisional round since 1990, including 15-1 straight up and 12-4 ATS if they're playing a team off an underdog win. I also saw another crazy number that stacks heavily against the Falcons here, in which teams that win as underdogs in the wild card round, the last 58 times it's happened that a team won in the wild card round as an underdog, only 12 out of 58 times did that team cover the next week as well. It starts to catch up to these teams, and I brought it up with Ted Safransky earlier. This is going to be the Atlanta Falcons' fourth road game out of their last 5 games as well. It's got to start to catch up to them a bit here, Paul.
Hey, Gabe, Matt Ryan last week, 21 of 30, 218. You had a 52-yard completion in there. So you take that out, and what, 20 of 29 for 165 yards. And that's been the nature of the Atlanta Falcons. They really have not been moving the ball effectively. I can't go with the Falcons here. I think the Eagles have a huge home field advantage, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But again, the public has a very short window when it comes to looking back.
Yeah.
Just like I said last week, Alabama, the line was inflated because they were looking back to Clemson. And they were looking back to Georgia's game versus Oklahoma, and they made him a 4.5-point favorite, which was too much. It's too much here. This game should be pick 'em.
What do you think of the number? Is it too much with the Patriots and the Titans? I can't talk myself into the Titans here. I know you generally don't lay double-digit points, but what do you make of this one?
I tell you, the public naturally is all over the Patriots, but the line has actually shifted down to 13 because the sharps are taking the Titans, and I think justifiably so. This, again, is an inflated number. The Patriots, I think, are a couple notches down the food chain on both sides of the ball. Brady has not been great. And look, do I trust Marcus Mariota? No. I said that last week. But if the guy comes up with a decent game and doesn't turn the ball over, sure, they could stay in this game.
Pittsburgh Steelers and the Jacksonville Jaguars, a rematch from earlier this year, 30-9 win. Ben Roethlisberger was picked off 5 times. Leonard Fournette rushed for over 180 yards. I hear a lot of people saying, well, Blake Bortles is going to have to play better. Blake Bortles is going to have to do this. Blake Bortles only completed 8 passes in that earlier game, but Ben Roethlisberger, I would expect, isn't going to throw 5 interceptions in this game. They only ran Le'Veon Bell 15 times in that earlier matchup, Paul. What do you make of this football game with the Jags getting 7 points on the road here?
I think you have to run Le'Veon Bell a lot more because the Jags' Achilles heel is their run defense. And you're right, Gabe. They had a very menial amount of yardage, the Jaguars did, in the first game. I think they had like 315. Part of that, or a bulk of that, was Fournette's 90-yard run. So you take that out, the Jags did not have much offense. It was basically an implosion by Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers. But I would not want the Jaguars here if I were the Steelers because they do have a defense that is real and quite spectacular.
I could see the Steelers winning the game and, you know, it being a real battle for them. Yeah, exactly. I think Pittsburgh, maybe some teasers. I think teasers are going to be big time in play this week, Paul. Yeah, you know, some of these games might hit on all 4 sides type of deal.
Well, the books knocked the cover off the ball with the teasers last week as the Chiefs went down because that was the biggest teaser play of the weekend. So the public took a hit, went for a cold shower early on. I think this is a tough game for the Steelers. Frankly, I have the AFC ticket on the Steelers, and I'm more concerned about this game than I am against New England because I think they will beat New England and they'll beat them handily.
Interesting, interesting. All right, I picked the Pittsburgh Steelers to make the Super Bowl as well, and I said they were going to play against the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings now up to 5 against the visiting Saints.
Gabe, this is a rematch of the first game of the season, won by the Vikings 29-19, a game which was really not that close because it was 29-9. Saints piled on a few points late, make it respectable, 29-19. Bradford, 27-32 for 340 in that game. Now, a couple key points about that opener. Crawley, who we spoke about a few weeks ago, cornerback, did not play. Marshawn Lattimore did. Adam Thielen goes off for 9 catches, 157 yards, which was the lion's share of Bradford's productivity. I think that the Saints are going to have a lot of trouble, not at the corners, but in the middle of the field, as they did against Carolina with McCaffrey, and I went over him on receiving. In that first game, their leading tackler was A.J. Klein with 11. A.J. Klein was placed on the IR a few weeks ago. Okafor was the number 5 tackler with 5 tackles. He's on the IR. And then Kenny Vaccaro was the number 3 tackler with 6. He is also on the IR. That's the Saints' problem right now. They're linebackers. So I think you're going to see Kyle Rudolph, who only has 3 catches, 4 catches his last 3 games. He's going to step up, and you're going to see a lot of Murray and McKinnon. Murray's been getting the lion's share of the carries, but they're both effective out of the backfield as pass catchers. You're going to see a lot of productivity there. By the way, interesting stat. Closed dome games, the last 33, 25-8 to the over. And here we are, closed dome game. Last year, 5-0. This year, already 1-0 with Carolina last week and New Orleans. So this is definitely a lean to the over based on that stat. Opened 45, 46 and a half, 47s right now. I'm leaning Vikings to score a lot of points here and the over.
I like where you're going with that. Paul Bovey, you can find his selections, his final decisions over at VegasInsider.com on the handicappers page. Right there on the front page, you'll see the links.
Thanks, Gabe.
Gary and Thorne joins me in studio. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's welcome Gary and Thorne into the studio, a studio in which you can watch him host a rotation Monday to Friday, 4:30 Eastern. Let's get right down to business, Gary, and we'll talk some DFS. We'll get your picks as well for the four NFL playoff games. We had Tony Cincotta on a couple of days ago talking about the quarterback position. He said he believes that either Tom Brady at the top end or Marcus Mariota at the lower end was the way to go. He basically liked the quarterbacks coming from this game either because Brady has a big game, probably throws for 2, 3, maybe 4 touchdown passes.
Titans are playing catch up.
Meanwhile, Marcus Mariota is running around playing catch up. What do you think? How are you approaching a quarterback this week?
It's kind of the way you have to go. You look at any angle you want to take at this particular game. It's got the highest total of any of the 4 games on the slate. You know, there's just little things that knock away at all the other matchups too. Like there's by DVOA, there's 4 or 5 of the top 8 pass defenses playing this week.
You're not taking Roethlisberger.
No, that's a bad matchup for Roethlisberger.
You don't want to take Matt Ryan on the road against that Eagles defense.
No, it's just not a great spot. I think Ryan might be the other guy I'd consider.
You know who I am, and I don't hear a lot of people talking about him, is Case Keenum. Because
I know
his fantasy numbers were down the last 2 games, Cam, but those games didn't really matter to the Vikings,
right? Here's the thing with Keenum, and this is why I think he's...
There should be points in this Saints game. You mentioned the highest total is 47.5 in the Pats game. This one's 46.5. It's right there.
There should be, but here's a couple of knocks on Keenum. And I'm not saying you can't attack that game specifically. I'm just saying that maybe he's more of a cash game play than he's a GPP play because the ceiling's not really there with Keenum. Like Minnesota...
He'll get you 16. He's
got to throw for 2-3 touchdowns to hit value because like they just don't throw the ball.
Who's going to be the least on Bortles? Yeah. People are going to say, God, he looked terrible.
Yeah, it's going to be Bortles.
He finished with 16 points last week. He's going to run around a
bit. Here's the thing. He ran for 85 yards. Yeah. Like there's a little bit of something there. Like I'm not looking at him in a cash at all. But like I do think that the Keenum thing... Like Minnesota, I believe they have the fourth lowest pass ratio in the NFL. Like he hasn't even thrown more than 30 times in like five of his last six games. Yeah. He hasn't thrown for 300 yards since like week seven.
I hate just being Johnny Public, right? I'm looking at Tom Brady and stacking him with Gronk because look at Tennessee last week before Kelce got hurt. Man, he was eating, man. He was killing him over the middle.
There's enough value on this slate. There's not a ton of it, but there's enough value on this slate. In a cash game, you just pay for Brady, you pay for Gronk, and you don't really think about it. I mean, the Gronk thing you could argue because, you know, like you said, the Titans – seemingly very susceptible to tight ends. Kelce was eating in that game. They've given up 8.1 targets on average to tight ends. That's in the top three of the league this season. Gronk should eat. At the same time, there's a weird part of me that feels like Belichick has been saving Gronk
all year.
The only time you really saw them use Gronk, like they can definitely use
against
him.
Against the Bills.
Well, the Bills game, but also that the Steelers game where they needed to score the last minute of the game. Four consecutive pass plays over the middle to Gronk. I don't know if they think they need him in this Titans game, you know? Like, I think they might. They don't want him hurt.
They don't want him hurt. Exactly.
Why should he get hurt in this game against the Titans, you know? Like, they're 13-point favorites. I still like Gronk a lot, but if there's one position.
Yeah, he'll have bigger numbers in a closer game in which they need to use him. I hear what you're saying there.
But I think that tight end position, too, like, there's – it's strangely enough, because tight ends usually such crap. Like, there's a lot of high-end.
Okay, Zach Ertz is normally a great guy when Carson Wentz was there. Do you want any part of him now? No.
I think it's a safety valve. It's not a terrible play. I think with so many people on Gronk and so many people on Delaney, I think the ownership is going to be low enough where he's a high-ceiling guy. Like, I don't like – I like
Hooper's
him a lot more.
The cheap guy right on the card, but it's kind of – that's a – what's he going to give you here?
Yeah,
right?
that's if you really – if you decide that you need Gronk, Brady, and Kamara – yeah, Rudolph's fun. I mean, again, that's sort of the – there's only going to be two passing touchdowns for Minnesota max in this game. One of them you just have to make sure goes to Rudolph because he's never – he hasn't really been the 100-yard guy this season. He's been – he brings back value if he scores a touchdown.
You're right. He's a touchdown. As far as the running back is concerned, you are taking a look at Latavius Murray, though, in this football game on the Vikings.
I do like Latavius. And I feel like people – they haven't given Latavius enough credit because we all know Jerick McKinnon's there. And McKinnon's been doing some great things this season. Yeah. But, you know, you just look at the other side of the ball. The Saints have shown this season you can have two very, very highly touted fantasy running backs in the same offense.
How many carries is he going to get? 16, 15,
20?
20?
He's think got
get
20 carries in three straight games. Gabe, he's got the fifth most carries in the NFL since week seven. He's got the seventh most fantasy points in standard leagues since week seven.
And
like,
he gets
he's a great
inside the
running
tank,
back.
Too.
Yeah, he's the goal line back. Like, exactly, no one's taking goal line carries. He's not going to catch the ball, so it hurts you a little bit in DraftKings. He's a better FanDuel play.
Yeah.
But the volume's going to be there. There's not a whole lot of running backs you can find for, what's his price, 5'6"? 5'4".
I like that. I know. And I prefer that. Derrick Henry's going to be a trendy guy this week, but they're going to be playing from behind. He could be taken out of the football game.
Although they were down 18, and he still got his carries in the second half
in
that contest. Like, I think they'll force feed him, but I'd rather say it's going to be a similar amount of volume between those two guys.
Because Malarkey quit. I think Malarkey was like, I'm about to get fired. Like, they,
that's true,
they,
yeah.
Like,
take the ball.
Really, I'm telling you, like, he had a look at defeat on his face. And I remember once, like, it was like a three and out, and Malarkey sort of patted the guys on the head like, man, it's done. You know, it's all right.
Do you think he gets mad? I don't think he's got much passion, Mike Malarkey.
And then there had to be a part of the Tennessee Titan ownership when they won the game. It thought, oh, God.
Yeah, we're stuck with this guy now. Yeah.
I was about to fire the guy like 20 minutes ago thinking, oh, he's done.
We talk about this all the time. There's like weird circumstances where winning actually is disruptive for the franchise.
Everything worked out perfectly. We made the playoffs, but Tyrod Taylor didn't do enough that we're stuck.
No one's feeling great.
Now it's like, yeah, we made the playoffs, but Tyrod, you got to go, and like we got to move on. Okay, Leonard Fournette lit him up the first time, 181 yards, but there was a big run involved in that.
Yeah, but that's a lot of the time that thing happens.
No, exactly. Right? 6,900. You know there's going to be volume here.
Yeah.
You know they're giving the ball to Leonard Fournette. And I know the Bills stacked the line last week. He didn't have a great game. But that doesn't mean he's not going to break loose in this game.
And he's been doing enough in the passing game to give you a little bit of a higher floor than you would probably expect from Fournette. Like, I think the volume's going to definitely be
there.
The
Jags have to have him involved in this
game. Yeah, like, there's no way to attack this game for the Jaguars unless you're just banking on your defense, trying to run out the clock with Leonard Fournette, playing in a low-scoring game where you might have the opportunity to win. And I think that's the only way they're going to win. So I do think Fournette's going to have a ton of volume. It is touchdown-dependent, like you're talking about, but so much is when you're paying up this much for a guy. Like, even Le'Veon Bell, he could catch 12 passes. He's still probably going to need to score a touchdown to bring back real value at his price point. So I like Fournette. Like I said, I really like Murray. I like sort of paying down to that lower tier. Even James White, or not James White, even Deion Lewis.
Deion Lewis. I was looking at Deion Lewis here.
Like, the volume's going to be there. It seems like we have a lot of set-in-stone running back situations right now. The Eagles one, I mean, I know you like LeGarrette Blount.
Well, I'm just
super cheap.
I'm just stating, I wanted to ask you exactly. And Garrett likes Juju. We'll get to Schuster as well. But give us a guy in that range. Like Corey Davis is $3,400. Yeah. LeGarrette Blount is $3,700. It'd be nice to slot one of these guys in the lineup to save some money. Any of these sleeper guys that you're taking a look at?
I think I'd rather pay down at wide receiver than pay down at running back this week. Just because, like we talked about, there's so many guys who are set in stone for a certain level
and
of touches.
And Blount, you're totally rolling the dice. He gets
the
ball on the 4-yard lane.
Because he's not even like Fournette where it's like, okay, maybe he'll save me with four catches
here. He's going to get 8 to 10 carries. And exactly. You know, Ajayi's going to get a load.
Yeah. Whoever's going to score the touchdown.
I would rather the Corey Davis intrigues me. Eight targets, seven targets. You know,
I kind of like. I mean, Decker's had some horrible drops the last couple games, but it seems like all the volume share in that Titan offense is going to Decker, Davis, and Delaney. Obviously, like Rashard Matthews just hasn't been involved in these games.
You know, a guy I like, and I haven't heard people talk. We talk about Thielen, is Diggs.
Oh yeah,
I like Diggs this week. I think he's in a nice matchup. I think he's a good spot, and he's a little cheaper than Thielen.
Yeah,
Diggs gets into the end zone. He'll get you, you know, 5-6 catches and a touchdown. But you like Smith-Schuster this week, right?
Yeah, I like Juju a little bit too because you look at the obviously this Jacksonville.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
It's a differentiation play, and people are so afraid of this Jacksonville secondary. And I'm not taking anything away from Aaron Colvin. He's a good cornerback. He's a good slot corner. But when you have the slot receiver against the Jags, he doesn't have to face, you know, Jalen Ramsey. He doesn't have to face A.J. Boye. So I think that's the best way to attack
them. We got to get out of here, unfortunately. Antonio Brown is as cheap as he's been all year, $8,100.
It's tough to get him in. If you're paying for Brady and you're paying for Gronk, there's no way to get him in.
I would rather pay for Gronk than pay for Antonio Brown. Here, check out Gary and Thorne weekdays at 4:30 on the rotation. What's up, everybody? I am Gabriel Morenci, and it's time for my best bets of the day. Let's start off in the National Basketball Association. We got the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Toronto Raptors, which usually be a really, 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 really cool game. Still pretty cool, but Kyle Lowry's most likely going to be out. He's doubtful, and Serge Ibaka keeps punching people, so he's suspended. Raptors getting 3 points in this basketball game, though. Cavaliers are a terrible road team. They're giving up a boatload of points. Let's go with the Toronto Raptors, and let's go with the over. Give me the 3 and the over. San Antonio Spurs minus 2.5 against the Lakers. Spurs can't lose this game, can they? I'll lay the 2.5, and I'm going to go over 212 to Spurs and the Lakers. College basketball, Clemson's playing great ball, but give me NC State plus the 4. We're going to go over 149 in that basketball game. Oregon and ASU, a lot of trends on the Ducks side, but I don't trust them, so I'm just going to bet the over 162. Utah's getting 6.5. I'll buy a half point, make it 7 against UCLA. We'll go Utah, UCLA over 154. And why the hell are the Washington Capitals only minus 150 favorites when they're as dominant as they are on their home ice? Give me the Capitals. Other night, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.